morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, October 6th, 2015. More fighting erupts, this time in western Equatoria State, in clear violation of the ceasefire.
The ambush police brigadier that was on his way to Bahr el Ghazal, killing six of his passengers and wounding the brigadier. They've been attacking Louis.
And aid workers pull out of Unity State's Lear County because of looting and insecurity there.
At around 7 p.m., so early evening, several dozens of armed men came into the compound, the humanitarian compound where our colleagues were spending overnight, and they looted the compound.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says the Army is battling a group of gunmen in western Equatoria State. Aguirre says an SPLA helicopter gunship attacked the group today in villages around Louis and Amadi counties. But he denies accusations by villagers that the gunship attacked civilian targets. A community leader from Louis, who does not want to have his name used for fear of government reprisal, told South Sudan in Focus that civilians have deserted villages in Louis, Jambo, Mundri, and Amadi. Last week, a group of unidentified gunmen abducted a number of youth from a football stadium in Yambio. Aguirre insists that the reason for Western Equatoria State's ongoing insecurity is inter-ethnic tensions.
This area has been witnessing a number of ambushes by a group, an armed group that behave like a terrorist group. And of recently, the ambush police brigadier that was on his way to Bahr el Ghazal, killing six of his passengers and wounding the brigadier. They have been attacking Louis. They have been attacking SPLA convoy that was taking logistics to Mundri. And even this morning, they attacked the SPLA base at Mundri. We don't know who is the group.
Yesterday, we got calls from areas of Jambo and Amadi. And the people there are saying that there is a plane that is bombing the area and they don't know who is bombing the area.
SPLA helicopter gunship was sent to a location where these rebels were reported. And this morning they managed to disperse the gathering of that group. And the gunship destroyed a vehicle that was stolen by these groups and they were using it. So I don't think they were the helicopter was shooting indiscriminately. It was shooting, targeting this group of criminals.
The people who called from these areas were saying that civilians there are now living in panic because after every 30 minutes, the helicopter gunship will come from Juba and just bomb the area.
Definitely, the army is aware about the villages, and they will not just bomb the village because that would be a crime. And we assure the civil population that nobody will target them. If there is any bomb that has fallen into the village, we are ready to go for investigation. But definitely, wherever there are criminals that are attacking government soldiers, people can be caught in crossfire. But
also in Yambio, we understand that 2 days ago, a group of unknown gunmen came and collected people from a football stadium, and their whereabouts are not known. Who are these unknown gunmen?
What is happening in Yambio is like what has been happening in Rumbek. It's a bit taking a communal channel, and it seems there is revenge and counter-revenge, particularly after the death of the speaker of the assembly of the Yambio, or Western Equatoria State. We believe that there is an internal conflict there that needs to be analyzed. See, whenever you have a global conflict at the national level, sometimes small mini conflicts arise and they need proper analysis to identify who are the actors and what are the causes. So there may be a separate issues in Yambio with the youth and the politicians. And the army at the same time. I believe the army is not part of those counter-attack in the villages that target even the members of the community.
The South Sudan Army is mandated to protect civilians in the country, regardless of the region or the location. In these areas that I've mentioned to you in Western Equatoria, civilians are saying that they are not protected. They are left to protect themselves. What is going on?
I really doubt whether that is an appropriate description of the situation. Who is protecting the banks, the institutions in Yambio? It is a government force that has been protecting the government institution installation in Maridi and Yambio, and nothing has happened to the market, nothing has happened to the banks, and this is the same army that is protecting the institution and the population.
That's South Sudan Army spokesman Philip Aguirre speaking with my colleague John Tanza earlier today from Juba. And there's been fighting and looting in other parts of the country as well. The International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, says it has been forced to withdraw its entire staff from a humanitarian compound in Lear County in Unity State after it was looted and its aid workers were threatened on Friday. And just a few hours ago, the medical charity MSF announced it, too, is temporarily pulling out of Lear. The aid groups say their withdrawal has left more than 50,000 people without food or medicine. Philip Thonolay reports for VOA from Juba.
Yamila Castro, the ICRC spokesperson in South Sudan, says the fighting started a week ago and escalated through the week until it reached the ICRC location in Lear County.
And there was heavy fighting on Friday in the morning and then again in the afternoon. At around 7 p.m., so early evening, several dozens of armed men came into the compound, the humanitarian compound where our colleagues were spending overnight, and they looted the compound. So they took ICRC vehicles and valuables, computers, telephones, money.
Castro says, after the looters stole two vehicles on Friday, armed men returned on Saturday to take more items. They also threatened ICRC workers.
That's why we decide to withdraw from Lear County and to evacuate rapidly the team members, 10 people who were in Lear at the moment.
Also today, Medicines Sans Frontiers, or MSF, announced it too was pulling out of Lear due to looting, with emergency manager Tara Noel saying, quote, MSF strongly condemns these armed robberies of its medical personnel and facilities, unquote. She added, these incidents have forced MSF to suspend its medical activities in Lear, and they are responsible for depriving the population of urgently needed medical assistance, unquote. It is not the first time aid groups pull out of Lear. The ICRC left in May, citing deteriorating security conditions. Its staff had just returned to Lear last month. Castro says they were planning to provide food rations to the local population there shortly after conducting a survey that revealed a high rate of malnutrition, but particularly among children, women, and the elderly. She says their plans came to an abrupt halt when the looting occurred.
We have put all our operations in Lear County in standby, which has terrible consequences for the people because the humanitarian needs of the population in Lear County and surroundings are dire in terms of food, primarily access to food. And at the moment, given the lack of security conditions, there are no aid agencies on the ground in Lear. That means that people have been left with no assistance at all.
Castro is calling on government and the rebel forces to respect the permanent ceasefire declared by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar after they each signed a peace agreement in August to end the conflict. She says humanitarian organizations like the ICRC must have unfettered access to people in need, and they are delivering that message to both sides.
We continue and remain in contact with all the parties involved to the conflict to understand what happened, to try to prevent this from happening again, because this type of incident hinder the efforts that ICRC is doing to help the populations in South Sudan. But we also remind all the sides that under provisions of the international humanitarian law that apply, all humanitarian organizations should be spared, and they should be able and allowed to carry on with their activities and operations safely.
Aid agencies have also raised concerns about a new fighting in Unity State, which broke out within days of a high-level meeting on South Sudan that was held in New York last week, which was aimed at soliciting financial support from the international community to implement the accord. For VOA News, I am Peter Tona Leo in Juba.
Several bottled water companies in the western Bahar el-Ghazal state capital of Wau have been closed for the past 4 days. Company officials say they have had to halt operations because they cannot get a hold of fuel to run their generators or the foreign currency that's needed to buy raw materials. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
Adam Abdullah is the manager of Ozarka, one of the 5 water companies in Wau that closed their doors several days ago. Abdullah says Ozarka was forced to halt operations because they have been unable to get U.S. dollars, which they need to import raw materials, such as bottles and printed labels. Abdullah says Ozarka has been shut for 3 days. He says the company imports the raw materials it needs from Dubai via Mombasa in Kenya. He says to pay for the goods, Ozarka needs dollars. Abdullah also says fuel price increase over the past weeks have also hit the company hard. He says the production stoppage at Ozarka is costing the company more than 200 South Sudanese pounds a day in lost revenues. Wow shop owner Samuel Hakim is also feeling the foreign currency pinch, but in a different way. Hakim says the price of a half-liter bottle of water has doubled in the past few days from 2 to 4 South Sudanese pounds. Hakim says he was caught unaware by the water shortages and price hikes. He says the water companies did not inform traders like him that they had to halt operations.
They used to sometimes inform us about we should stock more water because there's going to be shortage of water, but by this time they did not inform us. It is a sudden closure in their operations.
Elizabeth Peru is a businesswoman that runs a restaurant in Wau. She says she is losing customers because she cannot serve them water with their meals.
Most of the customers are complaining, like even others are moving away because of water. And it's really difficult for us to work now. And now all the companies have closed down. And it's really affecting me greatly.
Peru says if the water companies do not resume production soon, she might have to start treating water with chlorine so her customers can have something to drink with their meals. But she says she's not sure her customers would be willing to drink water that she has to purify herself. 40-year-old Muhammad Abbas owns one of the 7 ice factories in Wau. He says he too has had to stop operations. Abbas says he cannot buy a spare parts that he needs to keep his ice machine running. They have to bought in Juba and shipped into Wau. And they are expensive, he says. These days, Abbas also has to bring in a gas from Juba. That is expensive too. And the truck owners charges for the fuel in dollars, Abbas says. Abbas claims that closing his eyes, making business, has cost him more than 90,000 South Sudanese pounds in the past few days. Charles Wall chairs the Western Baragazali State Chambers of Commerce. He says the fuel shortages is created partly by insecurity. He says only a few truck drivers are willing to transport fuel to Western Baragazali because the roads linking the state to the towns where the fuel comes from are unsafe. He says the foreign currency issue is another matter. He says everyone needs foreign currency to do business. So money changers have priced the dollars out of the reach of the average trader. And he says demand for foreign currency is far outstripping supply. Wall says both situations would be remedied and business would be able to reopen if there were a real peace in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Will a much-needed measles campaign take place in Sudan? Find out more on that story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are some of the best memories in your life?
The birth of my daughter and my first wedding.
Can I say my matriculation and my graduation from the university?
The best memories in my life: first, giving birth when I had my firstborn. Second is when they made me a surprise birthday.
The memory when I met my girlfriend. That is one of my memories that I cannot forget in my life.
I think the best memory I can remember is the day I saw my son come to earth.
Some of the best memories in my life is when I was still young, under age actually. I enjoyed my childhood.
My completion of my basic degree. Those are some of the memories that I cannot forget.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we're talking about nutrition. Governments, NGOs, and scientists have worked for decades to increase the quantity of food grown to try to end hunger and malnutrition. But these days, they're shifting their focus to improving the nutritional quality of food. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with economist Howarth Lewis, director of Harvest Plus, a nonprofit group that breeds more nutritious plants and shares them with Africa and the world.
Our target is to improve mineral and vitamin intakes. And what distinguishes us is that we're breeding plants to put more minerals and vitamins in the food staples that the poor eat day in and day out.
You're actually creating new kinds of plants, right?
Yes. The way I express it is that we're getting the plants to do the work. There are a couple of advantages using the plant breeding strategy. The first is that we start with the smallholder farmers who are growing the crops that they eat. And when you have the fortified foods that are made in the factories, they often don't reach the rural areas. The second is that it's cost effective. By getting the plants to do the work, once they're in the food system, you don't have recurrent costs. So essentially the vitamin A and the iron and the zinc is coming free to the households.
Now, is this the same as so-called genetically modified crops?
It's not. We're using conventional plant breeding. We're just crossing high-yielding varieties with the high-nutrient varieties and getting high-yielding, high-nutrient varieties so that we're not using the GMO technology at all.
What is your approach in terms of getting traditional farms to use this? Are there any challenges in terms of getting people on board to actually plant these plants?
Well, we really have two messages for the farmers. The first is that our crops are just as high yielding and just as productive, so you're not sacrificing profits from the crops. They can also be sold in the market. Farmers are always looking for that. But then you get the added value of the extra vitamins and minerals in the crops.
Let me see if I understand what Harvest Plus does more carefully. Is it that you develop these things or you just sort of advocate for them? I mean, what is your involvement in it? A lot of people obviously are in the business of trying to make food more nutritious.
Well, the plant breeding process takes a while to develop the crops. To do the crossing to get the high yields and the high minerals and vitamins in the crops is an 8 to 10 year process to develop them. Then once they're approved for release in the countries, now we're involved in the job of getting them out to farmers and scaling up. We have the varieties now released in 28 different countries around the world. Now that we're getting the crops out to farmers, we're partnering with NGOs to take our crops and incorporating them in their programs, in the programs of the NGOs, in reaching out to farmers in developing countries. What we're doing now is quite a bit different than when Harvest Plus got started in 2003. So in the beginning, we had to prove that we could develop these crops in high-yielding backgrounds. There was some doubt about that. And we released our first varieties in 2012 in Africa. We also had to do nutrition studies. We had to prove that when vitamin A deficient, iron deficient, zinc deficient people ate our crops that we could improve their mineral and vitamin status. And now we've done those nutrition studies and we've convinced the nutrition community that we can make a significant contribution to reducing mineral and vitamin deficiencies. Now in the last 2 or 3 years, now that the crops are released, our focus is on extension to farmers and convincing consumers to eat these crops. So we're really into delivery and scaling up now. The governments are really quite excited. Initially, we chose target countries where we introduced a single crop. And in every case, the governments have said, why aren't you bringing all your crops to our country? Why are you just bringing a single crop? It's really gratifying to see all this time and effort that's gone into this starting to have some real impact.
That was Howarth Buis, director of the Washington-based Harvest Plus. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips. In Sudan, the United Nations Children's Fund is urging the country's warring parties to give the go-ahead for a life-saving measles vaccination campaign. Thousands of children in hard-to-reach areas are at risk for contracting the disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UNICEF welcomes a recent ceasefire agreement between Sudan's government and rebels in three parts of the country. The agency says it hopes the cessation of hostilities will finally allow it and other aid organizations access to tens of thousands of children in the Nuba Mountains, parts of the Blue Nile states, and Jabal Mara in northern Darfur. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillirac says these areas have been off limits for 4 years. He says his agency is extremely worried about the condition of children there, as a full picture of their humanitarian needs is not known.
An estimated 165,000 children under the age of 5 have had no access to vaccination in the Nuba Mountains and in some localities in the Blue Nile state alone. Sudan's children continue to be beleaguered by disease outbreaks such as measles. As you know, measles is killing lots of children when it's not prevented. Dengue fever and diarrhea.
Sudan was hit with a measles outbreak in January. Since then, there have been outbreaks of this killer disease in all 18 states, with 14 states at epidemic level. UNICEF reports 3,161 cases were confirmed by August. This is more than four times the normal annual caseload in Sudan. Bouillirac says measles vaccination campaigns have been ongoing for the past few months throughout the country, except for the three inaccessible areas. If the ceasefire agreement holds, he says this would provide an opportunity to rectify this dangerous situation. He notes children in Sudan continue to be victims of conflict and chronic underdevelopment. He says some 2 million children under age 5 are acutely malnourished every year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The German ambassador to Juba says there are lessons to be learned from Germany's reunification experience. Ambassador Johannes Lehne spoke last weekend at an event in Juba where Germans marked the 25th anniversary of their country's reunification. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Bior has more.
Germans mark the Day of German Unity every 3rd October since 1990 to commemorate the day that East and West Germany united to become a single federal Germany. At celebrations in Juba this weekend, Ambassador Lehne told dozens of foreign diplomats and South Sudan government officials that Germany had to overcome several challenges during the long process of reunification and that it took years before the country became politically stable. He urged South Sudan to follow Germany's example.
Just to mention a few, withdrawal of foreign troops, integration of two armed forces formerly opposed to each other, power sharing with a new opposition, and the unification of two currencies and two very different economies, and an economy, especially in eastern Germany, ruined by many years of mismanagement. South Sudan, in my opinion, is at a similar crossroad today. South Sudan has to find a way to reunite and integrate opposing forces in order to create a new, unified, and prosperous country.
Lehne says Germany faced huge challenges during their reunification process. Among them was how to handle the withdrawal of 340,000 Soviet troops from the country and how to integrate 150,000 troops from East and West Germany into a single national army. Lehne said many European countries questioned at the time if German unification would last. The ambassador said South Sudan's current political situation is similar to the one his country experienced decades ago.
Germany is ready to help South Sudan with its advice and experience if wanted, and to bring forward solutions for the warring parties in order to create a unified South Sudan and bridge the gaps which have been opened by conflict. At least I would like to express my sincerest wishes to South Sudan that the political and military leaders fix their minds on how to achieve unity again, as this was the vision of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang, unity in diversity.
South Sudan's minority leader in parliament, Onyotu Adigo, attended the German Unity Day celebrations. Adigo agreed that South Sudan can learn from Germany, especially when it comes to inclusiveness and to much-needed reforms to the economic, political, and social systems.
There is a need for decision-making to be inclusive. You involve everybody in decision-making for their own future. So during the unification of Germany, I think it is the right time for us to know, to learn from this unity where the West and East Germany were able to merge together. We can learn from it by bringing the opposition SPLM and then the opposition or the SPLM in government merging together in order to work out how we can run this, the affairs of this country.
Germany has grown in the 26 years since reunification into Europe's economic powerhouse. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report in Juba. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories. South Sudan's army spokesman, Colonel Philip Aguirre, says the army is fighting a group of gunmen in western Equatoria State and acknowledges using an SPLA helicopter gunship to attack the unidentified armed men in villages around Louis and Amadi counties. But Aguirre denies claims by civilians that the gunship attacked civilian targets. A community leader from Louis, who declined to be identified for fear of government reprisal, says civilians have deserted their villages. The International Committee of the Red Cross says it's removed its staff from a humanitarian compound in Unity State's Lear County after it was looted and its aid workers were threatened on Friday. And today, the French medical charity MSF announced it, too, is temporarily pulling out of Lear County. The aid groups say their withdrawal has left more than 50,000 people without food or medicine. And finally, several bottled water companies in the western Bahar al-Ghazal state capital, Wau, have been closed for the past 4 days. Companies say they had to shut down because they cannot buy fuel to run their generators and don't have access to foreign currency for buying raw materials. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Feu de l'amour, or The Fires of Love, by J.P. Impiana.
Est-ce aimer ou être aimé? Bien que l'amour soit le symbole d'un sentiment partagé, être aimé n'est jamais le signe d'un bonheur parfait. Bolingwe zama latima be. Kotolo nango motema symptome nango souci kasi kisi na yango se présence ya moto oyo ozali kolula lokola na lula masia yende kisi nanga Jésus Christ.
We've been listening to JP Impiana with the song Feu de l'amour. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope to see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.